Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. This is a show about love. What is it? Oh my gosh. It sure gets confusing. Oh. So we're going to try to clarify it. And to do that, I have a wonderful guest who is someone I respect greatly about many things, including his writings about love, his teachings about the universe, about evolution, about where we're all going, where we're headed, and maybe we're headed there lovingly. So, my guest is Andrew Cohen. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. It's great to be back with you again.
Thank you. And what do you mean by the word love? What does it mean to you?
Wow, that's a really big question.
Well, we only have 30 minutes. And we'll discuss this because I've read a lot of what you've written about love, and I'm very excited to talk about it with you.
Okay. So should I start?
Yeah, sure.
So I think this is it's an important and it's a very complex question, and I think it's a fantastic question that that you're really bringing up, because I think it's the word love means something very important, or it means, I think, that which we feel most strongly about, that which we care most deeply about to most people, whatever that means. And so that's why it's a good word to understand, because whenever we use that word, it refers, as I've been saying, to that which we value more than anything else. And so we could say, I love my dog, because I do. Or I love my son, I love my daughter, I love my husband, I love my wife, I love my father, I love my mother, I love my house, I love nature, I love my extended family, I love my I love my ethnic brothers and sisters, I love my religious tradition.
So, what you're talking about are all things that bring you joy, right?
They're all things that bring us joy, but sometimes, I don't think we can simply say that love brings us joy, because often, if we're speaking about that which we care about more than anything else, it can also be an area of life that causes suffering because there's so much emotion and there's so much there's so much emotion, there's so much identification with in relationship to whatever it is. It can also be an area of life where there's a lot of suffering, you know, for good reasons and for bad reasons. But the fundamental distinction I like to make, or I like to help people make when we look into the question of love, is that, especially if we're looking into this from a spiritual perspective, is there is an experience of love, or that which we care most strongly about, that is very personal, that relates to the personal psychological self. You know, I love, you know, I, as a unique individual, love you, you know, my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, or my lover, my husband or my wife. I love you deeply, you know, more than anything else. More than anyone else. And so you could have an experience of personal love where there's a deep experience of personal attachment and personal identification.
Right. I call often, I see that as a dedication too. Who are you most happy to be dedicated to? These are people that you don't even, it's not a choice even. I mean, love for your family, for instance, is something that, I mean, you're, of course you're choosing it, but it's determined. A lot of people aren't that way. A lot of people reject their families and possibly because they're disappointed in their love for family members.
No, what you're saying is very true, but I mean, if we want to speak about this in a context of spiritual liberation, there's a different dimension to all this, because in a context of spiritual liberation, there's love that creates attachment, which is bondage, and there is another kind of love, which you could call spiritual love or non-relative or absolute love, that sets us free from all attachment. And that is a very profound distinction, and it's one that not enough people, I think, are familiar with. So on one hand, you know, this is just, I think, as we begin to meditate, as we learn to contemplate, you know, the deeper dimensions of the human experience, we can sometimes, to our own surprise, discover that love, what we usually call love or what we call personal love, is also attachment. And attachment is always bondage, interestingly enough. And there's another kind of love that transcends any notion of individuality, that has the power to set us free, that actually liberates us from bondage and liberates us from attachment. And interestingly enough, enables us to love more profoundly, more deeply, and more human beings, more sentient beings. So personal love, you know, tends to be exclusive. It's the love of my lover, my husband, my wife, my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, my son, my daughter, my family, my tribe, you know, my religion or my country, versus a deeper and more profound experience of love that liberates us from the love that is exclusive to any particular individual, any particular tribe, nation, or family.
Right, and I'm hearing you that way, that this is kind of like a tribal love, including family, including nation, including religion, and it's a dedication, a feeling of a oneness with those people and groups in your life.
That's right, and so of course that's a powerful and important and significant dimension of the human experience, but we just want to be mindful of the fact that of the difference between love that is exclusive versus love that is inclusive, and it's a very profound and important distinction, because the love that is inclusive comes from the awakening to the deeper dimensions of the human experience and the deeper dimensions of consciousness itself. When we begin to recognize or awaken to the fact that, you know, that that what we call love, which as I think, you know, as you said, it's an experience of joy, but there are different kinds of joy, and it's a discovery of the awakening to the deepest dimensions of the human experience, deepest dimensions of our nature, with which mystics universally have declared is the discovery of that which is infinite, beginningless, and endless. And it's the shocking discovery that who I really am and who you really are, when we look beyond the relative distinctions of you and me, you know, all the greatest mystics from all the traditions have discovered that which has no beginning and no end, that which is literally
interesting,
infinite. And then there's a discovery of a different kind of love, and it's a love that's freedom from attachment, it's freedom from bondage, and it's freedom from identification with this and that, which awakens an experience of love and bliss. It's the deepest experience of love, and it's simultaneously the experience of freedom, not bondage and not attachment.
Right, and that's the infinite experience, because freedom is infinite. Freedom is the feeling of endlessness.
Exactly.
And so that's infinite. So
that's right. Yeah. But that changes. See, so then when we have that kind of experience, especially if the experience is deep enough, if it's deep enough to actually begin to actually liberate us, then we begin to recognize that all lesser forms of love, while powerful, potent, and also significant, are still relative.
Well, they're relative to our condition in this plane, for instance, to our human needs versus our perhaps spiritual needs, even though you can include spirituality with everything.
Well, that's true. No, what you're saying is completely true. But what's important here is, in other words, the experience of love, also when it's personal, feels like it's everything. You are everything to me, you know, whether it's romantic and sexual love or even if you really love your children or if you love your parents or if you love your family or you love your tribe or your ethnic group or you love your religious tradition or you love your nation, you know, that can literally be everything to you if your state of consciousness, your level of development has not grown to include, as you know, the great American philosopher Ken Wilber would say, more and more of the cosmos. Then that's all you can see. It's all you know. But so then you think that what you're loving is everything, but it actually is only a part of everything. And so that's an important distinction.
And I think we're touching on something that, because I like what you said about being either inclusive or exclusive. So all of a sudden then, this inclusiveness could start having rules around it. And you could be...
The exclusive one, you mean?
Yes. Well, no, both of them, actually.
The inclusive one, you mean, I'm sorry.
You can, right. You can, well, the exclusive, it wouldn't be automatically have rules. But the inclusive can start forming exclusivity because... You
talking about what happens with religious traditions, you mean?
Well, that and all kinds of other rules and laws that are formed around the tribe.
Well, that's true. Of course, that's true, and that does happen. And, you know, I guess so much of the history of the emergence of the great religious traditions is kind of that story. But I think that what's important here, though, is that the subjective experience of love that is radically inclusive, is a love that it's a loving beyond relative distinctions, and from a mystical point of view, it really is the discovery of consciousness, because consciousness is the ultimate foundation and the ultimate context for everything that is, and for human beings, especially, you know, consciousness is the ground of our experience. Everything occurs within consciousness, and so when our attention moves from the object, when our attention shifts from being identified with the objects that arise in consciousness, like my husband, or my wife, my son, or my daughter, my tribe, or my nation, or my house, or my car, or anything else. When my attention shifts from the objects that arise in consciousness to consciousness itself, we realize that the very ground of our experience is infinite. And if we look into the nature of that which is infinite, that which has no beginning and no end, we realize that its nature is love. You know, which is, and when we discover that, it gives us an enormous amount of what I call spiritual self-confidence, because that's when we realize that the ultimate nature of reality itself is love, but it's not a personal love, it's an impersonal or absolute love that really does sweep us off our feet and makes us begin to question, well, who am I really?
Right, and these are so important, these distinctions, because what you're doing is you're expanding the possibilities of this word that so many people don't understand. They don't know those distinctions, and then they start... You know, like people come up to me and say, "Do you love God?" You know, it's like, well, what do you make out of that? What do they want? What are their distinctions that they don't understand or they want me to work in their mindset?
Yeah, well, if someone said that to me, I'd say, well, it depends which God you're talking about.
Of course. And you know, how do I hold that? I have no idea how to hold that. Or do you, if you're a Christian, do you love Jesus, or do you know that Jesus loves you?
I hope he loves me. I'm Jewish. He should.
right. That's right. And yet this is all talk, you know. And so we can even climb into relationship love, and how love is used as a word that people don't understand because they're caught in feelings and not in this more spiritual infinite expression. And you've written a lot about that, about piercing the romantic illusion.
Yeah, well, that is, I think, the romantic, thank you for bringing that up, and the romantic illusion is, I think, and this is called fueled by, you know, powerful, you know, biological and neurochemicals. It's the illusion of that which is infinite. You know, that kind of romantic and sexual love masquerades as a love that has no beginning and no end. But of course, because it is only temporary, because it arises and it passes away in time. When we awaken from being swept away by it, we realize it wasn't what it appeared to be, and then we're left somewhat confused as to what actually happened there.
Right, and I'm happy about your candid writing about your youth and the romances that you were caught in and how caught up you were in those, and I had those too, and we learned from them.
Hopefully, a lot of people. Right. You know, Peter. A lot of people actually don't. I mean, that's, you know, I'm 56, so you know, I have more life experience than I did 10, 20, 30 years ago. And sometimes it often surprises me as men and women get older. They don't seem to have. They've often gone through similar episodes, like I described in my writing, that you obviously had similar experiences. So many of us have had more or less the same kind of experience. But interestingly enough, sometimes we just don't get the message. You know, we don't really just begin to analyze, scrutinize the nature of our experience and really do and learn from it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know it's true. And then a lot of people end up just repressing their feelings and avoiding those anything that come close to that. By being much more independent and not finding that great sense of connection that, for instance, that you talk about in your relationship with your wife, and understand what love really means in a long-term relationship. And it's no longer the ecstatic experience of our hormones or oxytocin levels, but it's really about learning trust. And you talk about that.
Yeah, well, I've thought a lot about this, and I kind of realized that trust is... trust is really... is sacred. I mean, that trust is sacred. In other words, and trust is something that we extend, you know, to each other. It's something that we give each other. It's not there. Trust is not something that exists out there, outside of us as individuals. And I was having a discussion with someone about this the other day, and he'd been reading about the whole nature of trust, when we were talking about it, he said, trust is something that we give each other. It doesn't inherently exist out there. And so, because trust can always be taken back.
Well, we can learn to trust or not, and then again be disappointed at some point. And it's hard to maintain. I think every marriage has work to do. For instance, I've been with my wife for almost 33 years, and we love each other tremendously to the point of dedication. We are dedicated to the point where our frequent bickering and disagreements are under the umbrella of trust, so that we can be so angry with each other and know that very, very soon we're going to get over it and because we're dedicated to the long-term relationship. We trust each other to fully forgive each other and forgive ourselves, to be there for each other, and that's trust, even though you bump around in it.
Sure, well, trust and commitment are kind of the same thing.
Right.
And the thing is that trust and commitment, are part and parcel of what a truly spiritual relationship to life is all about. Because someone who's unwilling to extend their trust you know, in a profound way, and also is unwilling to make a very deep commitment, is basically a selfish person, you know, because they're fundamentally just looking out for their short-term pleasure, short-term satisfaction, short-term gains, you know, gains. What can I get out of this for me right now? And so with that kind of attitude, you know, there won't be real trust, and there won't be real commitment. It's only with real trust and real commitment that we can discover and begin to experience, you know, deeper dimensions of human possibility and human potential in our relationships with each other.
Yeah, I think that trust is a word that we should make more important in our relationship discussions with people.
I agree, and it's not just with our, you know, sexual partners, but with, I mean, to me, trust is, trust and God mean the same thing to me, to be completely frank.
I love that. That's great. And well, I can see that in like, let's say you're having an argument with someone and you make up or whatever, you know, and then the words are, I love you, you know, and that's kind of nice. But what if you say, instead you say, I deeply trust you? That feels so rich right then.
And well, but it's also, as I said in something that I wrote, it's easier to tell somebody that you love them than that you trust them.
Yes.
And I remember it just kind of spontaneously came to me, and it shocked me. But it, because we think, oh, if I tell someone I love them, you know, it's going to put me in a very vulnerable situation. But, you know, not half as much as if you extend your trust to somebody, because then you're in a much more vulnerable situation. And the thing is, what we realize when we make these kinds of distinctions is that we don't trust that, we don't deeply trust that many people.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I think probably for a very good reason, because we probably found that not as many people as we would like to think are worthy of our trust, you know.
Yeah, and
so then
also,
so for example, if the conversation we're having is about love today, now we're saying, well, you know, for example, as you can see with me, it's easier for me to talk about love when I'm speaking about love as a metaphysical experience and ideal, as a metaphysical absolute. But when it gets into the realms of real human relationships and relatedness, to me, the whole issue of trust, like, as you know, as obviously we both feel, becomes a lot more intriguing, meaningful, you know, relevant than just the word love, because love then just becomes to be very general.
Right, and my wife and I both counsel young couples, and we both are interfaith ministers. She performs tons of weddings for people all the time, and does a lot of this counseling. And when people come and they show up as young couples, doesn't matter what age they are, but new couples, let's say, and you say, well, how are you getting along? You truly love each other. And they say, oh, yeah, you know, we never fight. We agree on everything. And, you know, at that point, we'll say to them, well, maybe you're not ready to get married.
Well, you know, Peter, what I've been doing with couples lately, which I think you'll find interesting, I think for some people might think this is a little radical, but when people say that they're interested in each other, you know, romantically and sexually, and I say, okay, I say, are you willing to be engaged, make a commitment to be together, but to hold off or to resist consummating the relationship for 6 months or even a year? And what I tell them is, because if you do that, by the time you guys get together, like let's say a year from now, you're going to really know who you're getting into bed with. And if you really do want to be together, you're going to have a very clear sense of who you're getting involved with. But what too often happens with young people and also older people is that they experience, you know, an attraction, a sexual attraction, and then they act on the sexual attraction, which of course, you know, activates all kinds of, our neurobiology, and we experience the ecstasy that the activation of these chemicals generate.
Right.
It's very difficult under the intensity of that kind of experience, of that kind of chemically induced ecstasy, to actually have a clear sense of who the other is. And then, of course, when that begins to die down after 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 3 months or whatever it is, then we suddenly start seeing the other person as they actually are. But now we have exposed ourselves, you know, sexually to the individual. We've experienced a certain kind of vulnerability, and now we're in a very uncomfortable position because we realize this individual who have I shared a lot of physical intimacy with, I actually don't know.
Right.
Then we have to figure out then, you know, well, who the heck is this person, and do I really even like them, or do we really fit? So what I encourage people to do, but they need to be spiritually developed to exercise this kind of restraint or self-control, is to make a commitment to be together, but make a commitment not to consummate the relationship for 6 months or a year. So that, because if you spend time with someone for a year, you know, in a series, you're going to get a clear sense of who the other person is. And then after that year, you might decide in the period of that year actually that this person isn't who you thought they were, and you don't really want to be together. And then no damage done, no harm.
Yeah, I agree. And yet I'm a little bit more liberal. And what I'll say to people is, I'm not so much worried about the two of you consummating it as two things: don't have babies and don't write any contracts. because they're too far ahead of themselves, and so you and I both have the same purpose, is to get people to that other place where they can develop trust by knowing truly who this other person is, rather than the mirage that their neurochemicals will create.
Exactly.
And so I'm so glad we only have a couple of minutes left, and I'm so glad to be able to talk about this subject, which we could talk about for hours and hours, because
we're just getting warmed up.
Yeah, I know. And it's so much fun because it's something that is so important to everybody. Indeed.
Right. Well, that's, as we were saying at the beginning, that's what we're saying, love is that which is, that, you know, that which each individual holds as being, you know, more important than anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And so I'm loving this conversation.
I'm loving it, too.
Good. Good. I hope our audience is having a good time, too. And so what are good parting words to say about this?
Well, I would just really probably want to repeat some of the themes that I brought up at the beginning. Is everybody should keep in mind that there are really two kinds of love, one that is relative and one that is absolute, and that the love that is relative, you know, we experience, in relationship to our family and also in relationship to sexuality. But there's another kind of love that transcends time, history, anything that's personal or local, which points us to, you know, the ultimate, to our own ultimate nature as human beings, you know, the ultimate non-relative or absolute our absolute nature, but also the ultimate or absolute nature of existence itself, and when we penetrate these deeper layers of our own selves and of life itself, We make, you know, the liberating discovery that love is actually the ultimate nature of reality, of existence itself.
Well, thank you.
That's very liberating. Yeah.
We have to stop, but it's been so great. How can people find you, Andrew Cohen?
Yeah, they can come www.andrewcohen.org.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. This is so wonderful. Maybe we can have a future discussion about the infinite. Wouldn't that be fun?
I would love to, Peter. I've had a great time with you today.
Good. Thank you, me too.
Thank you.
All right. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. And thank you so much for listening.